Chapter 16, which is an exercise in the philosophy of composition. Footnote. The Philosophy of Composition is an essay by Edgar Allan Poe which describes how to compose a tragic poem. Poe writes, "The death of a beautiful young woman is unquestionably the most poetical topic in the world." Harvey took his breakfast in the gardens. While he waited for his friends to join him, he picked up the Complete Shakespeare he had found in the library and began to read. He was unaware that Mahogany and Adelphine had eaten an hour before and were now on their way to visit the Cinque Terre. The five small coastal towns between La Spezia and Rapallo, called the Cinque Terre, are famous for their situation among the most dramatic scenery in Italy. Spaced at almost equal distances, one from another, the towns are connected by a narrow footpath, used formerly by goatherds and presently by workers in the vineyards. Mahogany and Adelphine propose to walk from town to town. Beginning at Monte Rosso, the rocky path climbed steeply from the bay, rising to a point high upon the gray cliffs overlooking the water, then turned inland through the terraced hills. After an hour, it opened to a shady grove, where Mahogany and Adelphine stopped to rest. Leaning back against the knotty breast of an olive tree, they watched the midday light as it sifted through the leaves. "You know," said Mahogany, "sometimes I feel that we are all connected."
"We are," said Adelphine.
"I mean more than just people," said Mahogany.
"I know what you mean," said Adelphine.
"Remember in Paris, when I said no creature would attack itself? Well, the fire did not burn me because I recognized its energy as a form of my own."
"That's because you share Harvey's gift," Mahogany protested.
"How little you understand," she said, and kissed him on the forehead. "Let's take another example. Do you agree that you cannot relate to someone in whose life you do not somehow participate?"
"Yes," said Mahogany.
"And that for communication to exist between two people, they must share a common point of understanding?"
"Yes," said Mahogany.
"And at that common point they are joined," said Adelphine, "and, in essence, become one?"
"Yes," said Mahogany, "it seems that way."
"Well," said Adelphine, "the same point can be reached with anything, for we are all of one essence. It's no less mysterious to sit in conference with a flower or a tree than to talk with another person. You must only find the shared ground which joins you. Once you do, the message of a common shrub is no less profound than that of the wisest scholar, if you learn to listen."
"A common shrub?" said Mahogany.
"As soon as you see this," Adelphine continued, "you realize that your own essence and the essence of the world are one. Separateness disappears, and all things become your companions. Then the destruction of those things becomes the destruction of yourself. This is the lesson people continue to forget."
"I remember in San Diego," said Mahogany, "watching the traffic-jammed cars lined up and poisoning the air, and I would think, what gives us the right to destroy what is more beautiful than we are?"
"We have no right," said Adelphine.
"But how can people come to understand this?" said Mahogany.
"You have to yoke your Atman to the Brahman," said Adelphine.
"Your Atman to the Brahman?"
"Exactly," said Adelphine. "Atman is your individual soul, and Brahman is the universal. In order to understand the universal, you must yoke it to the individual."
"How?" said Mahogany.
"Well," said Adelphine, "you have to begin with your Atman, of course, because it is only in ourselves that nature allows an interior view of the world."
"And how do you come to know your Atman?" You can't understand it logically, said Adelphine, but only by the mystical intuition that comes from the elimination of thought. The philosopher Chuang Tzu said, the mind of the perfect man is like a mirror. It grasps nothing. It expects nothing. It reflects, but does not hold. But how can I eliminate thought? Said Mahogany. There are many ways, said Adelphine. You can gaze steadily at a minute object, or think continuously about the meaning of a word. The result is a cloudiness that leads to a mental vacuum. Another method of creating a mental vacuum is by repeating innumerable times the sacred word Om. You know, she continued, life is not a long time, and life is not a short time. It is a single moment repeated, and its great tragedy is not death, but what dies inside us while we live. Oh, Adelphine, said Mahogany, how can I repay you for all that you've given me? Footnote. Hunk Oman, in his 12-volume I Don't Understand, Flintstone Press, Salt Lake City, 2000, page 969, asks, why is the wench always smarter, populating the stereotype that men are stupid pigs? Back to the text. Oh, Adelphine, said Mahogany, how can I repay you for all that you've given me? A few of those grapes might do the trick, said Adelphine, pointing to a cluster that had fallen through the vineyard transom. They smiled at each other, then scrambled for the fallen fruit. Mahogany arrived first, but Adelphine caught him and, rolling him on top of her, made him drop the grapes in her mouth one by one. As you might imagine, one grape led to another, and soon they were licking the juice off each other's lips. When the 2 o'clock sun streaked through an opening in the vines, it found them making recklessly tender love on the naked earth. Shine, shine, shine. Pour down your warmth, great sun, while we bask, we two together. Winds blow south or winds blow north, day come white or night come black, home or rivers and mountains from home, singing all the time, minding no time, while we two keep together. When they reached Vernazza, it was almost 4 o'clock. They skipped Cornelia and took the train directly to Manarola, then walked the Via dell'Amore to Rio Maggiore. At 6, they were back at the castle where Harvey was still reading in the garden. Adelphine went to take a shower, and Mahogany walked out to the terrace overlooking Portofino. The dock, only big enough for a few dozen ships, was filled with small yachts. Mahogany sat and watched as the people milled about, going in and out of the shops and cafes. The name of a restaurant caught his eye, the Ristorante Delfino. Posso cenare stasera con Adelfine al Delfino, he chuckled, surprised at his Italian. The sun was beginning to sink behind the trees, and Mahogany closed his eyes to better appreciate its caress on his face. His bare hands and arms were cooled as the shadow moved to his shoulders and neck. Then it crept across his chin, his lips, his nose, his eyes, and his forehead. When he was completely immersed, his attention shifted to the sounds rising from the port. He could hear a restaurant playing an old Jimmy Buffett song, and he hummed along. The garden seemed suddenly more fragrant as the cool air pulled the aromas closer to the earth. He inhaled. He exhaled. He opened his eyes and saw the dark eyes of Adelphine. She was sitting on the terrace wall in front of him, fresh from her bath in a white robe. Her arms were wrapped around her knees, pulled up before her, and her hair was wet and shining. "Bachami," she said, and leaned to kiss him. As she moved, her robe pulled open and exposed the delicate line of her left shoulder. Then a small black bird swooped down and landed on her head. Amused, she lifted the visitor into her hand and caressed its shiny black feathers. "Ah," she said, looking over the bay, "to be as a bird, a winged messenger of heaven, sailing upon the bosom of the air." She raised her hand, and the bird flew away. Unfortunately, having taken on the animal's personality as half of her own, she was inspired to do the same. And her joyous leap from the terrace sent her careening to the harbor 100 feet below. She hit with a thud. Mahogany was stunned. He clambered to the edge and looked down. Darkness and nothing more. "A delphine!" he screamed and rushed to the port. The narrator intervenes. Oh, dear, gentle reader, imagine, if you will, the horror of this singular scene before you. Mahogany has rushed to the side of his love and has taken her in his arms. She breathes. There is still life within her. Her eyes blink. Her lips move with speech. Her hands clasp his hands. Her pulse quickens in her temples where his fingers caress her, pulling back her damp, dark hair. Then nothing. Nothing. No strength in her hand, no rise in her breath, no direction in her gaze. Where? Where has it gone? Where is the life that was there, the energy that moved and fed the limbs, the eyes, the mind? Where? Is it there in the trees? There in the sky? There in the roll of the waves? And the mind, cold, erased, a blank tape. Nothing. Nothing. Nothing but bones and flesh, a weighty mass of coagulating blood. Nothing but this. When Harvey arrived, Mahogany was at the edge of the dock, rocking back and forth with Adelphine in his arms. The water lapped at his feet, repeating the single syllable, death. It was good fortune the fall had not cracked Adelphine's skull, for half the universe would have been swallowed in the half-vacuum of her mind. But Mahogany would have preferred to have been swallowed, because the world that only moments before had seemed intimate and secure was now centerless and immense. He looked up from her still open eyes and cried, "Why should a dog, a horse, a rat have life, and thou no breath at all? Thou'lt come no more. Never, 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 nevermore." Just then the fatal black bird swooped by, carrying a book in its claws. It was the complete Shakespeare Harvey had been reading. Feeling the same pain as his friend, the captain sat with him and was about to speak. "Say not a word in life's favor," Mahogany stopped him, "for I would rather be a paid servant in a poor man's house in Hades than a king of kings among the living. For there I could see her, touch her, hold her." Footnote. See Homer, The Odyssey, Book 11, lines 487 to 89. Achilles in the underworld expresses the same sentiment in reverse.